Number one.
From the number one college town in the Big 12. Big 12. We're back with the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Y'all know what time it is. It's the Purple Project Podcast. Once again, live from Manhattan, Kansas, where you'll find me, Eddie Greer III, a.k.a. EG3, the Purple Project Podcast, all about the latest in what's happening in Kansas State athletics and sometimes what's going on here in the community. Another episode here about to get underway. This is, I believe, episode 12 of Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast. Before I bring on my co-host, as usual, you can find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's from Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, Radio.com, and SoundCloud, as well as the Purple Project Podcast. Another latest addition to the K-State podcasting family, and now joining me, not in Manhattan, Kansas, but as always, out there living out west, San Diego, California, none other than the other half of the Purple Project Podcast, Double A. What's happening, Alex?
You know what, Eddie? A couple things. First off, loving being able to watch baseball. What a weekend. Yep. In, I got the baseball fix on. I watched so much baseball over this weekend. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't even care. In fact, before the podcast, I was watching the Royals, obviously my team, and they are currently at 12-6 in the eighth, so I was enjoying that game. And people listening to this will either say, ha-ha, Alex, you're about to have a huge surprise and see the Royals blow a six-run lead, or they're going to say, don't worry, Alex, your Royals coasted to an easy win. So I guess we'll see when this podcast is which one of those happens. Getting the baseball picks in, especially with the news that broke out of Philadelphia today with the Miami Marlins and 11 players having, or 11 personnel players having the coronavirus. Now I'm just hoping that, I'm thinking, you know what, Alex, maybe you should get as much baseball watching in as you can before something happens. Mm-hmm. So, now I'm just trying to watch as much baseball because I'm just afraid it's going to get canceled.
Yep.
Because it's been nice to see it. So getting the baseball fix in. And I also saw today, Eddie, that Commissioner Boolsby said that he remained optimistic that the Big 12 was going to be able to play a 12-game season and that they were going to await and see what the ACC decides, which is expected on Wednesday, so which would be the day after this podcast, and see the decision that they're made. And they're expecting a decision at the end of this week to the beginning of next week, so the next time the podcast rolls around, we should probably have an answer.
Oh, yeah.
The big old question on will there be non-con or not? But I was encouraged to hear Commissioner Boolsby say that they remained optimistic at this time that they could play a 12-game season, or he alluded to it anyway. So, the coronavirus continues to throw wrenches in baseball, throw wrenches in college football, throw wrenches in the NFL, throw wrenches in everything. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I'm just enjoying having sports back on television, watching baseball, watching the Royals, and then on Friday, Thursday, actually, the NBA will get going again. Friday's what I was thinking because that's when my team, Portland Trailblazers, they get going on Friday. But the NBA will be good Thursday. So, you know, hopefully the sports thing can keep going and, you know, we don't have to cancel some sports, which is kind of my fear right now in baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, you almost took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah, I've been watching a lot of baseball the weekend. And to kind of add on, was finally sports being back, but yeah, that's kind of the fear right now that we've been talking about on the Pro Project is, that second wave of the COVID-19. But also, I'm going to throw in the women's NBA. WNBA also started over the weekend, too. I watched, I'm forgetting her name, Inescu. Yeah, her debut against Breonna Taylor and the Seattle Storm the other day, over the weekend. So, got to watch her play for most of the game. I had to leave to for a little bit, but I was able to watch that game. So, yeah, sports are back, but at the same time, you still have to be aware of this whole COVID thing, which is not, obviously, making a statement and not going away. And we had a Miami Marlins situation. Woo! That's rough.
I've heard some discussions from people today that, now just really the NFL and, college football, they should be watching closely for this, bubble versus non-bubble, seeing that right now there's no positive test at the moment inside the bubble in the NBA. There's no positive test at the moment inside the bubble at the NHL, I believe, or MLS soccer. And the baseball's having their outbreak. And so, or the Marlins, I should say, are having the big outbreak. And baseball's had some others. Five or six Royals have tested positive. I think you said at least that four Braves have tested positive at some point. So baseball's had some of that with no bubble. And it's starting to kind of materialize on, do you want to go to the bubble format? Do you want to not go with the bubble format? The NFL has been pretty adamant that we don't want to do a bubble. But if baseball, if this doesn't end up working in baseball, then you see it working in the NBA, you almost wonder if the NFL is like, well, we want to play a season, so we'll bite the bullet and we'll find a way to do a bubble. But you can't do a bubble in college sports, Eddie. We've talked about this before, and that's what makes this whole NCAA football thing just that much more complicated. Because you're on campus with all these students, you can't play in a bubble. So, this is just an interesting time. It's interesting to see. This is really the first true test of all these things that we've discussed with the coronavirus and sports coming back. What's going to happen when we see the first outbreak? Well, we have the first outbreak in baseball that we had in sports. And we're gonna see here in the coming days what happens. We're going to see if it derails the whole MLB season or if the system will actually work and be able to get baseball back on the right path. Now, if it works and it's able to get baseball back on the right path, that will give me a lot more confidence that we can successfully roll sports out in this format. And it'll give me more confidence that we'll see K-State football in the fall. But, because K-State can't play, as I mentioned, in the bubble. But if this doesn't work and baseball can't, they can't kind of get their legs under them and they're just having too many outbreaks, I'm going to be a lot less optimistic about K-State's chances at the field in the fall.
Yeah, we're all going to be in trouble then. That's for sure. Yeah, and kind of to swing back, you mentioned what's on the list, the commissioner, Bob Boesby, and he mentioned, believe it was earlier today or yesterday, but it was actually today, actually, where he says, the schedules don't have to match. Well, I got a couple questions about a couple of my buddies last weekend and over the weekend about, are they going to play conference schedule or we're going to get the full 12 games? Well, I don't have to answer to that, but you know what? Maybe the commissioner does, and we will find that out soon. Obviously, we've talked about it on this podcast last episode and most likely the episode before that. And oh, by the way, if you have missed previous episodes of Purple Project Podcast, you might want to go check that out. It's good stuff, good content, K-State content, of course, and we've been talking about some other things outside of K-State too. But yeah, go and check that out as well to try to keep your mind off COVID and whatever else is going on. But back to Boesby, he says they don't have to match up, so basically saying we want to be our own league. And yes, the Big Ten, the Pac-12 already gone to the conference format, so they don't. And we talked about the big time matchups, non-con matchups, previously on the podcast. Also, that we're going to be missing out on. So the Big 12 apparently is going to be way on the ACC now. K-State, they're not playing an ACC team. They're playing an SEC team in Vanderbilt there. So that's interesting to me there that they're winning the ACC and not the Southeastern Conference, because they're playing, at least on a tentative schedule anyways, Vanderbilt. Now, with NASCAR, now, for those of you who don't follow NASCAR, now, I'm a NASCAR fan now, they switched up their schedule a lot to try to get all these races in. They have to move some stuff around in the midweek races, and this is the year to try things out. And maybe if things don't work, you don't try them, but they work, you're implementing them. Like, so NASCAR, for at least the last couple of years, been talking about midweek races. Well, we've gotten a few of them, and now it was 2 weeks ago. Well, actually, this past week at Kansas, that was the last official midweek race of the year. So that was a real good race there. But trying all these things, they're doing a doubleheader for the trucks at Kansas Speedway last Friday and Saturday. So they've been doing a lot of things to try to get all these races in. Now, fast forwarding to this situation here now, obviously we're waiting until this podcast comes out tomorrow, like Al just said, and we will know a lot more by the end of the week, and we'll definitely break it down one way or the other. And that's just interesting to me that, you know, Commissioner Bob is waiting on the ACC to make a decision before they make a decision. So from my aspect of this now, why would you wait for another conference to make this decision? Besides, you guys can go ahead and make it. But yeah, that's just an interesting angle from where I'm sitting at.
Yeah, you know, and this all is really interesting, to be honest with you, because we know this is going to be, and for people who are maybe trying to, you know, play catch up on, you know, what all is going on. Heather Dinich talked about it a little bit on Twitter today. She's a college football reporter for ESPN, and she also talked a little bit about it on ESPN Today. And the way that she broke it down is obviously with the Big Ten and the Pac-12, we're going to non-con as we've discussed in past shows. The ACC, based on kind of what she has said, is kind of on the fence. It's almost kind of the feel, almost a little more neutral, and, you know, let's see what we do. And they're going to have a meeting on Wednesday, and they expect to come out of that meeting on Wednesday with a decision on what to do. And then you've got the Big 12 and the SEC, who Heather Dinner said, you know, their preference is to play a 12 game season. So those two conferences are the two that essentially, it sounds like, are the warmest on the 12 game idea, which isn't a big surprise if you think about it. You know, that possibly the two of the most competitive of Power Five conferences when it comes to football. So it's not a huge surprise there. But but it sounds like you're right, that they're going to wait and see what the ACC does on Wednesday. And you know, when Gene was asked about this a week and a half ago, you know, he said, you know, we've got time. So, you know, there's no reason making a decision back whenever he talked. Maybe it was early July. Reason in making a decision on July 8th when we don't need to make a decision till the end of July. So, you know, let's see what happens. Let's see what other people do. And then, you know, we'll kind of go from there. So I'm guessing that they're just kind of thinking, well, you know, we're not going to have a decision by Wednesday. So let's see what they do. And then, you know, kind of go from there. The Big 12 has been pretty, Gene Taylor specifically, has been pretty vocal about they plan on having a decision by the end of July. So that would be...
Well, that's coming up quick.
That would be late this week. So, yep. You know, that's why I said, you know, expect probably a decision from the Big 12 quickly after the ACC. I'm with you, Eddie. I don't know why they're basing it off of why they would base it off the ACC. And maybe they wouldn't base it off of the ACC. Maybe they're just interested in hearing what the ACC does, because Boolsby did, you know, make it clear today that, you know, we don't feel like we have to do what the other conferences are doing, you know. So, hypothetically speaking, the other four, you know, Power Fives decide, you know, we're just playing conference schedule. Boolsby essentially said, we're not afraid of, you know, being the one that plays the 12-game conference. You know, that's kind of what he hinted, or the 12-game schedule, excuse me. That's kind of what he hinted at with the comment on, you know, the schedules don't need to line up perfectly with all these Power Five schools. And so, But it's going to be a big week, and so, you know, people will just be following throughout the week and kind of see what happens and what's decided. We, you know, there's a handful of non-Power 5 conferences that have pushed their schedules. We already know they've canceled it entirely in the fall. And you wouldn't expect that the Power 5 would make any sort of drastic decision like that. But you know what? It'll be interesting. Everything, the thing about this, Eddie, is everything has moved so fast.
Mm-hmm.
All of it. I mean, even going back to the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City, for the men's, where K-State's playing one night, and then there's no, their basketball's done the next night.
Yeah,
you know? So everything has moved so quickly. You know, who knows what can happen in 1, 2, 3 days, let alone a week. Mm-hmm. Or two. But it's going to be a big week, and we'll know a lot more.
That's right, yeah. And K-State, one, going back, going all the way back to March, yeah, K-State was playing TCU, and they beat TCU, and here we are. And then the next day, we're all, okay, we're getting ready to play this. I don't know who they're going to play next. I think it was KU, I think. I don't know. That seems like a long time ago. But they're getting ready for the second round opponent, and then all of a sudden, everything gets shut down. So yeah, it's going
to
be...
But the cool thing, I always tell the story to people now. Hey, guess who won the last college basketball game of 2019 in all of college basketball? That's right. It's your K-State Wildcats. Yeah, reppin' EMA from Manhattan, Kansas. You better believe it. They were the last team to win a college basketball game, Eddie.
That's right, yep.
Right.
And speaking of the basketball team, they were in the news over the weekend. And speaking of this whole COVID thing, and sorry to beat a dead horse, folks, but K-State basketball team, the men's side, Bruce Weber's team, they were supposed to play in the Cayman Islands for their usual tournament. Well, and this is funny because now they have to relocate that to Florida, which has been one of the hot spots. Florida, Texas, and Arizona, they picked it up, but they moved that tournament to the Florida Panhandle near Destin on the Emerald Coast, which is Niceville, which is now the place where, well, if we're at a basketball season, is where they're going to be going. And these teams for K-State, okay, so this tournament was supposed to be played, and it's still a long ways out still, Alex, but November 23rd through 25th, K-State, along with Miami, Mississippi, a.k.a. Ole Miss, Oregon State, Nevada, Northern Iowa, LaSalle, oh goodness, that brings up some bad memories.
That flashback.
In Western Kentucky, these are the teams that are playing in this preseason tournament, and this got moved. And this is a little bit, I think I'm on a concerning side of this, because Florida, they've been a hot spot. Now for the NBA side, I don't know how in the world. I mean, there's been some interesting issues coming out of there, especially with Lou Williams not doing what he was supposed to do for the Los Angeles Clippers. But I find this very intriguing still, that they moved this to from the Cayman Islands, which has been a hot spot, to another hot spot in Florida.
I don't know, maybe they figure, you know, we're going from like a scolding hot spot to just a very warm hot spot. I don't know if that's their thought process in the move, but... you know, honestly, the biggest thing for me, Eddie, is it's so far, far out that it's kind of surprising that they would make a decision that early. To me, I understand that you have to make decisions months in advance because, you know, there's so much preparation, especially in those tournaments. I understand that things need to be, decisions need to be made months in advance, but that's like, That's around 6 months away. I mean, that's a really long time.
Mm.
So I was kind of surprised. Just to put in perspective, everybody by now knows who Dr. Anthony Fauci is. You know, I heard him today talking about how, you know, their vaccine was beginning its phase three, began its phase three clinical trial today, which is the final big trial for it. They're doing it on 30,000 people. He said, heck, you know, we could have the results back in October and be able to begin administering vaccines in November. You know, what if you go through all that process and then all of a sudden, oh, we moved this tournament, or oh, we canceled it. Oh, this isn't a problem anymore. Oh, I didn't think about that. You know, I mean, it's so far out that we don't know where the coronavirus will be in late November. We don't know where we will be as a country.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a little baffling that they would make that decision just in general. But at the same time, I understand that you have to make those decisions in advance, and they probably just want to have a plan. But it also is a little baffling that they decide, let's move it to Florida, where which is one of the hardest hit states right now. But hey, that may not apply in November to Florida. So who the heck knows? But you know, with how much uncertainty there is right now, it's just near impossible to make plans for anything. You know, it's hard enough for me to, make a plan on, where I can go eat right now, for goodness sakes. You know what I mean? Like, it's
okay. Yeah.
Any decision right now, go eat this weekend. I mean, I can't even make that decision as far in advance. So, I mean, how am I supposed to, make that decision? So, it's a tough deal. You know, it really is a tough deal, Eddie. But ultimately, I think the biggest hope for K-State is, You don't want the tournament to get canceled, because those are going to be very valuable basketball games to this really young team. They're going to get to play some good competition, and not necessarily blue bloods or anything like that, but good teams that will really help, I think, this young team and their development in this upcoming season. So I think that tournament is a huge, really a huge opportunity for them. And their growth and their development with the basketball team. So losing it would really hurt them a lot. It really could affect their Big 12 play, in my opinion. So ultimately, if you're K-State, I think you just hope it gets played some way, shape, or form.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Eddie Greer III, Manhattan, Kansas, Alex Aiden, San Diego, California, a couple of K-State grads, / Wildcat, number one, not alums. This is Triple P. Yeah, Alex, you nailed it right on the head. You took the words basically right out of my mouth there. Those guys, young guys, need the work. They need to go out, especially, not getting together during this time. Obviously, we covered it right here on this podcast. We talked about it a lot already, and it's going to continue to be a critical topic now. With this tournament moving back to Florida, that means K-State will go back to Florida in back-to-back years. Of course, they're there last year for Thanksgiving week for the basketball events. Now, last year, of course, the Wildcats lost a pair of games, which they should have won, Pittsburgh and Bradley. Fort Myers tip off last November, which they got scorched against Bradley, and Pittsburgh. They had a chance to win that late, and then, of course, the theme was 2019. They did not execute late in that ball game there. But yeah, Alex, we have a good recruiting class coming in here. We mentioned them already, and we'll continue to talk about them when we get, when we get to the basketball season, like Bradford, Kaskoopy, might have butchered his name again, Miguel, Pat, and these guys. And then also, I was going to talk about Rudy Williams here, also coming onto the K-State team. So you got, and then you have these young guys along with the sophomore class of Dejuan Gordon, Antonio Gordon, and Montavious Murphy, and the lone senior of Mike McGurl. So this whole team, they need I can't think of the right word, but they need that teamwork. I'm gonna put it right now, the caromity of, we gotta, get together in the right spots, work on this, work on that defensively. We know Bruce Weber loves to preach defense. We've heard it for the last several seasons here. So they need that work. They need that development to get better each and every week. And yeah, they lose this tournament. Yeah, that's going to be a huge hit for K-State, for quite a young team.
It would be an enormous hit. You hear, I think people don't understand the value of the non-conference. A lot of times I think it's kind of glossed over. and maybe it isn't quite as important in football, but in basketball, it is so important, especially when you got a young team. You know, it's, you know, you can't, you got to find a way when you got a young team. You want to put them in positions where they've got to fight some adversity. They've got to feel the pressure. You want to be able to try some different things out. You want to be find lineups that work, and you want them to, you know, go up against some players that might be bigger, faster, stronger, to see how they're going to react, because you're going to be playing against a lot of players that are bigger, faster, stronger in the Big 12, you know, just because the level of competition is so high in the conference. So, you know, you want to replicate some of that. And you don't want to crush their spirits, but you want to really give them the opportunity to play against some good you know, some good teams. And heck, Eddie, you know, it's big for the resume. You know, you take that tournament off of K-State's schedule. I don't know if K-State will be a tournament caliber team. I don't have a clue if they'll be a tournament caliber team, Eddie. But I will tell you this, if that tournament is taken off of their calendar, it'll be much harder for K-State to be an NCAA tournament caliber team, because you lose some of your biggest non-con games. And it's harder to strengthen that resume with non-con games. When you look at K-State's basketball schedule for the upcoming year, you know, you think two of their best-looking non-con games are going to come from that tournament.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, that it's also big from that standpoint. So, you know, it's really an important tournament. And like I said, that could end up being a moot point, you know, whether they're in the tournament safely or they have another year like that last year and they're not even in the discussion. but you know, you always think about those things going in. And so, you know, we'll have to see. I have to say this, though, again, my final case of basketball thought, you know, I saw the videos of them working out on K-State Sports and on Twitter. I don't know how you play basketball with a bat, Eddie. I don't know how you do it. I see baseball. I understand how you can play baseball with a mask on, but I've seen these guys who are running up and down the court with the mask on. I can't even breathe with no mask when I'm playing basketball, Eddie. I'm like sucking air. Everyone's like, Alex going to die over there? I mean, I definitely die with a mask on my face. So I don't know how the heck they're doing that, but kudos to them for being in the gym and working hard, because they look like they're working hard right now. That's what you want to see from the young team.
Yep, man. You nice transition, man. You took the transition right from my mouth again. Yeah, Bruce Weber's team's got back out there doing summer workouts on the court, and so is the women's basketball team. Saw pictures of that as well. Jeff May and their girls getting some summer workout too with the mask and everything else. So Bruce Weber talked about it a little bit last week in one of the articles I read, saying, hey, it's better be safe than sorry, you know, with all this going on, the Miami Marlins, we touched on it earlier tonight on this podcast, with this is going to be the real test. You mentioned it. This is going to be the real test here. Pretty much all sports are back in session for the session of football. And college football, the NFL, they've had plenty of time. I mean, yeah, their season starts in September. They have plenty of time to observe NASCAR, Major League Baseball has begun, for the time being anyway. So, it's going to be interesting, because I've heard a lot of opinions. Well, I don't think college football is going to make it. I don't think NFL, with all the hitting and anything else like that, you have to make, it's a contact sport. I don't think there's going to be a season, this and that. So I'm really kind of, I'm intrigued to see what college football in general and the NFL, National Football League does. And actually, speaking of the National Football League, NFL, they're going to be starting training camps on time. So they're locked in on that.
That right there is a line. Now I'm losing my words. What is up with us, Eddie? It's because it's Monday night. That's why.
Yeah, it's Monday. It's Monday.
There's your silver lining, is that you look at the NFL, we talk about all this Debbie Downer Corona news. NFL training camp, it's starting on time. Initial coronavirus tests don't look that bad. Fingers crossed that they can get going.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of us want football. I was listening to this. I forgot which show it was. I believe it was, I think it was Cayman actually, saying that, I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was Cayman while I was on at work. I travel a lot for work, so, but they're talking about, well, everybody needs college football right now. That's been the staple of this country. So everybody's hungry to, and everybody's hungry to have football back. So everybody's getting anxious now. We're towards the end of July now, and August is coming up very quickly here, and mentioning the start of training camps already, and we're about to find out here really quick if COVID has anything to say about that. That's for sure. So, but I want to flip it back to basketball real quick before we talk K-State football, the nominees in the second half of the podcast. All right, so going back to last year, the non-con. Alex, you mentioned it. Okay, so North Dakota State, going back to last year's schedule, North Dakota State, UNLV, that was a grinder. We won that one. Monmouth, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, and then you got to win the critical games, right? That looks the resume. You want the big wins against big-time opponents, right? Okay, so I already talked about Pittsburgh, Bradley. Loss. Pittsburgh, they should have won that. And they got Bradley, they turned it up in the second half, and they couldn't stop one person from shooting threes. No. Florida A&M, a win there. Marquette coming into Bramlage. And yes, K-State, they put up a fight, right? But you lose that game. That's a critical game right there that you lose right there. Mississippi State. And no offense to Alabama State, that was one there. Mississippi State, another one. Should have won that one. Mm-hmm. St. Louis at the Sprint Center, which is now the T-Mobile Center, but the Sprint Center, right? Lose that game. And you get big games from Levi Stocker, who unfortunately decided to transfer out. We already discussed that.
Of all transfers, yes.
Yeah, St. Louis at home, or not at home, but KC, you lose that game. Tulsa gives you fits again. You come out and win that game. So, and then the other big loser here, Alabama in the SEC Big 12 tournament, Big 12 little thing they did do each year. Alabama, you go on the road and lose that game. And for me, when I look back at that, Alabama, in my opinion, they don't have a hostile, this is my opinion, they don't have a hostile, to me, they don't have a very good home court situation. And you go down there and you lose that ball game. So that right there, I just named off Alabama, St. Louis, Mississippi State. You're 0-2 last year against the SEC Conference.
And literally should have won. You make a legitimate argument that they should have won every single game that you just mentioned. Not like, you know, well, that's just an excuse they lost that game. No, I mean, they should have legitimately won. Won each game. I mean, you could make an argument for that based on where they were in the game. The St. Louis game, they lost by one possession, if I recall.
Yep.
And you know, it shouldn't have even. It shouldn't even got to that point. I mean, K-State just ran on it, let St. Louis, you know, hang in there, and they just couldn't finish it off. And then you look back at Mississippi State, and it's the same deal. K-State had a big lead, and then they just kind of puttered around, and then Mississippi State kind of hung around and got back in it, and then they just kind of made a quick little late push to finish it off. And then Alabama was the same type of deal.
Same thing.
Was clicking, and they were playing well offensively, and then late they just kind of crumpled in that game. So, you know, those are important games, and you can't do that. And heck, you know what? We'll go back even a season before that, Eddie, with K-State visiting Texas A&M.
Oh, gosh.
Of Barry Brown and Dean Wade and Cam Stokes, their senior year.
Oh, gosh.
A lot of people wondered, well, why was that K-State team a four seed? I mean, you know, you know, Texas Tech was a 3 seed, and they both tied for the, you know, for the Big 12, you know, championship. You know, why was K-State a 4 seed? Well, you can probably look back at that Texas A&M loss, because that was technically considered a quadrant 3 loss, which is not good, anyone who's wondering, with the new system. And if K-State wins that game, finds a way to just win that game against not a Texas A&M team that was not good.
No, they're not good. Hell no, they're not good.
That was the difference between K-State probably being on the 4 line and the 3 line. Heck, that might have been the difference between K-State and Texas Tech might have swapped spots. And in K-State, they've got a much better, they would have had a much better matchup, most likely, in the NCAA tournament, and they could have maybe gone on a run instead of having to go up against a UC Irvine team that was not a good matchup. as a 4 seed. So, I mean, those are the types of things about these non-con games and them being important. And heck, we'll go back to the Cam Dean Barry season again. If I recall, didn't they lose to Tulsa that year as well? In Tulsa?
They went out to lunch on that one. Yeah, they really struggled. Yeah.
They did themselves no favors in their non-con, Eddie. In fact, if I recall correctly, I believe that they just about lost at home to like Southern Miss in that same season too. So, I mean, they put themselves in a bad non-con situation, and they had a great conference season. That was great. They were on fire through conference play, but they started out slow, and it's why they were a 4 seed. And if they could have gotten to the 3 or the 2 line, then they probably could have made a deep run instead of, you know, being one of those upsets on the first weekend. So,
you never want to be one of those. Never.
No. And that's the importance of those non-con games. And you look at some of these teams, and you're like, well, that team won 20 games. Why didn't they make the tournament? Well, you know, you may look at their resume and their strength of schedule is like 168 or something, and they didn't make it because of that non-con. They didn't get any big wins in the non-con. So, you know, it's... Those games are important, really, regardless of how good you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only teams that really don't feel the effects of those games are the KUs and the Kentuckys and the Dukes, because, you know, they play so many good teams, they can make it up. But K-State doesn't have the luxury of playing Michigan State every weekend, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or playing, you know, Duke every year, like KU does in that basketball tournament that has KU, Michigan State, Kentucky, and I'm blanking on, and Duke.
I think that's in New York, usually. Yeah. I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you don't have those opportunities as K-State does to be able to say, well, you know, we lost this bad one, but it's okay. We got Michigan State next week. We can go get them. No, K-State does not have a non-con schedule like that. They've got to take advantage of those games. Because most likely, as you mentioned, they're going to be playing an Arkansas Pine Bluff caliber team for the next 4 games before they actually are playing a team that could possibly bolster their resume. So, you've got to take advantage of those games.
Yeah, especially the winnable games. Yeah, you brought back some some frustrating memories there, especially with Texas A&M. That was frustrating there.
That was a frustrating game.
That was very frustrating there, and... Yeah, we have that type of talent, like a Dean Wade, Barry Brown, Cam Stokes. Yeah, you gotta win those games there. And
yep.
K-State usually finds a way to lose those games for whatever reason. But, yeah, exactly. But it'll be interesting to see with this young group of guys, with the lone senior of a girl, if we do get a basketball season where the schedule stands. And, of course, once that's announced, we will definitely talk about it here on the Purple Project Podcast. So, yeah, a lot of basketball talk in the first half. We're going to switch it to football. And there's some nominees, Alex. And, of course, Skylar Thompson, once again, gets nominated for the Werfel Trophy last Thursday. And it's the 6th straight season that a Wildcat has been up for this award, which includes... 2018 finalists, Dalton Reisner, now the offensive lineman for the Denver Broncos. So, Thompson, we've talked about on this podcast already, and you're probably going to, K-State fans, you're probably most likely still hear more about Scott Thompson as we hopefully commence on a 2020-2021 football season, which, speaking of which, Harvard and they have moved their football season to spring. We talked about that a couple episodes ago. But anyways, but yeah, Skylar Thompson on the Wolfram Trophy watch list for his work in the community. And also, and obviously, he took a step forward last year. And I was listening to, going back, I think 2 weeks ago, listened to a podcast, and I think it was Tim Fitzgerald's podcast, the Powercat podcast, but their questions podcast, which I love listening to that podcast. They were, one of the questions was, Skylar Thompson, is he a top five Big 12 quarterback? and they all said no. So to that extent. So, you know, if K-State is going to take their game to the next level, we finished 8-5 last year. We discussed this already. So we got weapons back offensively. The question is the offensive line. And we will talk about the offensive line either next week or the week before. We will definitely break down offensive line, but that's going to be critical. But Skylar Thompson, if this team, K-State team, wants to take the next step forward and wants to challenge for a spot to Dallas for that Big 12 championship game, Skylar Thompson's got to still, I mean, yes, he took that step forward, but he's got to somehow get out of his old ways a little bit, like waiting too long to get rid of the ball, or a wide receiver gets open, like a Joaquin Gill, for example, whatnot, gets open, Phillip Brooks, and he's staying there holding the ball too long. He sometimes goes back to his old habits, and it costs K-State offense big time in games. So, yeah, Skylar Thompson is on the Wolfram Trophy list, but that is the question now. Going into a questionable football season, I'm going to leave it like that. Can Skylar Thompson take his game to the next level?
You know, you're saying that we can't have the Skylar Thompson that just totally airmailed the receiver in the bowl game against the Navy on the first drive. Can't even remember who the receiver was now. I think it was
Phillip Brooks.
Was it Phillip Brooks? That's one of my last Skylar Thompson memories, is that first drive against Navy in the Liberty Bowl. And you're right, maybe it was Phillip Brooks, but whoever it was who just broke wide open. And I can't remember if he overmailed him or if he underthrew him.
He overthrew him. I remember.
He's done both. He's done both a lot. So he's totally airmailed him. I think that's what's frustrating with Skylar sometimes is that, you know, as you mentioned, when he gets nervous in the pocket, he starts kind of dancing back there, and he tries to make a play even when there's nothing there. He almost gets rid of the ball too late, or he doesn't feel the pressure maybe coming from one side. And then other times, you know, he just misses an open guy. And, you know, granted, I'm sitting here watching Patrick Mahomes every weekend, so I guess my bar is pretty high. but you know, you do see him miss guys, I think, too often. But with that said, as I've told you before, I thought Skylar took a big step this past year in Chris Kleiman's first season with K-State. I thought he was a much better quarterback. I thought he was more consistent. I thought he made a lot more plays, especially with his legs. You know, he did a lot of really nice things with his legs, and I thought his reads were better, and you know, I thought he played a lot better, and he played a lot more confident. I think that was one big reason why, because he just has so much more confidence, and his leadership qualities are A+. You know, the way that he is able to lead a team and get them to rally around him is just, I really think that shined last year and showed that, you know, that natural God-given ability that he has to lead people. You know, with that said, he needs to take another step, I think you're right, this year for K-State to have a chance to play in Dallas in the Big 12 Championship. You know, if they want a chance to realistically be there, Skylar needs to continue to be that leader. He needs to be able to continue to make plays. and be smart with football and get rid of it early and not make dumb decisions, and to be more consistent with hitting guys when they're open. Because, you know, like as mentioned, you know, there's just times that, as you mentioned, as I mentioned too, he just misses. I just think he misses too many guys. You know, I've never been terribly impressed with his passing skills, to be 100% honest.
I'm right there with you. Yeah,
I'll say he can't get there. You know, but he doesn't have the passing skills that Jake Waters had. You know, he doesn't have the passing skills, in my opinion, that Colin Klein had. You know, he doesn't have those. And look, he doesn't need to have those. I've also been pretty vocal about that too. He doesn't need to come out here and reinvent the wheel, you know, and try to, you know, recreate Jake Waters and Tyler Lockett with Malik Knowles out there. I mean, he doesn't need to do that, you know, and I think that's a beautiful thing about Chris Kleiman's offensive system is the running game is really the bread and butter of that. And I think that plays Tyler's advantage because then if you can get that run game to set up the pass, it's going to make things just that much easier for Skyler. And then it can get him going, get him in a groove, get him some confidence, and then you can do some more things. And then we talked last week about the speed that K-State's going to have this year at receiver.
Yes, sir. Yep.
You know, with that, you know, you can. There's some things you can do to get Skyler in a rhythm with maybe a quick little shovel pass to Youngblood that he can break 15 yards. You know, to get Skyler going, or maybe a little 5-yard slant of Malik Knowles. You know, that he can break and get going. You know, maybe a little fullback screen to Nick Leonard's. You know, you know, and see if he can do something there. So, you know, I think that, you know, there's things that he can do to really be able to get comfortable and get in a groove this year. He's got more, in my opinion, he's got more weapons, more talent around him this year. The offensive line is obviously the big question. But he's got a lot more talent, a lot more weapons around him. And I think that he is in a position to succeed. He just needs to kind of break some of those bad habits. He did a good job cutting down on them last year, but he needs to cut down on them even more because, you know, if we get the same Skyler that we got last year, you know, K-State will have a fine season. You know, I think that they could win over 6 to 8 games with Skyler having the same type of season that he had last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that may be your ceiling. You know, if you can get better production from Skyler, maybe you can win 9 games. You know, maybe you can surprise people and rattle off 10 games if your defense does end up having a really good season, which I think is possible. So an offensive line ends up panning out. So, you know, I think if anything, it just raises K-State's ceiling if you can get more production out of Skyler rather than possibly capping them off at a 7 or 8 win season. But I will think back to this, Eddie. And I've mentioned this listener, a former player before, talk with him all the time, and Keith and Valentine, former running back. He sees comparisons. He's told this to me numerous times. He sees comparisons from the Joe Burrow situation in LSU to the Skylar Thompson situation in K-State. That does not mean that Skylar Thompson is Joe Burrow to make that.
Not even close. No.
Not Joe Burrow, obviously. But the situations are similar to where Joe Burrow had the different coaches, and he had to do the, you know, he transferred from Ohio State, and he kind of had to claw his way up, and he didn't really peak until he had a year under Ed Orgeron's system at LSU in that final season. With LSU, which is true, you know. I don't think anybody even projected Joe Burrow as a first-round quarterback coming into the year, and he ends up being the number one overall pick. I mean, just to put in perspective that Joe Burrow was not on anybody's radar.
No.
And, you know, he sees a lot of similarities. You know, obviously, Skyler Thompson is not Joe Burrow, but, you know, he mentioned, you know, hey, I see a lot of similarities in the situation. And, you know, maybe, you know, he sees the potential for Skyler to possibly have a bit of a surprise year where people are like, whoa, what is that from Skyler? But if you think about it, Skyler's never been in an offense and given a chance more than, you know, 1 year. So there is that unknown, and we don't know what Skyler will do
right
in year two in command of an offense because we've never seen it.
Right.
So it's an interesting comparison. And, you know, I definitely think there is room for Skyler to do. I think he can take the next step, Eddie. I really do think he can take that next step and surprise some people and turn the heads. Will he do it? I don't know if he'll do it or not. But I do think that he's capable of it. And it wouldn't surprise me if it happened.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, we don't know if Skylar Thompson's going to take that next step, but it'll be interesting to find out, especially once football season does officially arrive. Now, to put a pin on Skylar Thompson, he was also a nominated candidate for the Maxwell Award. This is the fourth straight season that a Wildcat has been up for this award, following quarterback Jesse Ertz, 2017, running backs Alex Barnes, 2018, and of course last year, going back to James Gilbert last year, one of the running backs here at K-State, who transferred to K-State, Michael Bishop, 98, Colin Klein, 2012, were each finalists for the Maxwell Award. And yeah, we all know about Michael Bishop and Colin Klein, big time quarterbacks, and that's what K-State Nation's hopes that Skylar Thompson becomes that guy. You know, I'm not gonna go that far in saying comparing him to Joe Burrow. He's not even close.
Well,
but
Eddie, I would once again reemphasize, I don't think the comparison. The comparison is not him to Joe Burrow. I think the comparison is more of the situation that Joe Burrow is in to the situation that Skylar Thompson is in. I don't think anybody believes that Skylar Thompson is Joe Burrow. I know Keith and Valentine does not believe that Skylar Thompson is Joe Burrow.
I would hope.
I think it's really more of the situation that he's given and the fact that, you know, Joe Burrow, it legitimately, people were like, what the hell is this? Like, this isn't the QB that we saw all these prior seasons at LSU. Like, this is not the guy we saw last year. Like, what is going on? You know, I think that, you know, it's kind of, his point was, you know, we could see Skylar come out and all of a sudden, you know, Skylar's making plays that we didn't know Skylar could make. And we're just like, what the hell's happening? Like, whoa, Skylar is one of the best, better QBs in the Big 12. I mean, wow, he's performing at the top of the Big 12 QB list right now. You know, I mean, I think that's more kind of the comparison that he was referring to was more of the situation. But yeah, I mean, I, Joe Burrow is in a class of his own. I mean, I don't think anyone could, you know, compete with that. I mean, that dude's got the play package. He can throw it. He can run it. He can do anything, you know? I think it was a little more in reference to that situation.
Yeah, and Skylar Thompson, if there was a stretch last year that he was playing really well, the comeback against TCU at home last year carried into the OU game. He played magnificent there, and then he just ran all over KU there. KU had no answer for Skylar Thompson. So you get that Skylar Thompson there playing like that, stepping up a little bit more, then it could go a long way for sure. And yes, he needs that running game Chris Klieman, Courtney Messingham, and those guys, they need that running game. That's the bread and butter. You were smack on the money on that one, Alex, there. They need that running game. And it's been really, just not last year, this has been the staple since I've been up here in Manhattan, Kansas, the running game, not the passing game. And obviously, Jake Waters was a pure passer, very good passer. But
yeah.
K-State is known for the running game. And so when you have, obviously, you have guys back. We talked about it on last week's podcast. The Jarcadia Wrights, Harry Trotters, Tyler Burns, Joe Irvins of the world. Yeah, those type of guys. You have those are the new recruits. Also, let's not forget about them. One name in particular, I mentioned him on this podcast, Deuce Vaughn. A speedster? You talking about him on giving him the football? So yeah, absolutely. You know Thompson.
Sorry, it's another Keith and Valentine because we were literally talking and texting about this today. were texting about Vaughn, and he said, once again, not comparing him to this running back. Just says he sees some of this running back in him. He says he sees a little Sproles in him. And he's a former running back. Just everybody, you know, gives this a little context. And Keithan is a former running back. He was a running back with K-State. He's watched film on a majority of these backs. And he says that he sees a little Darren Sproles in him. And he says that he sees some of that on his tape. And says that if he can, you know, build up, you know, I believe he said if he could build up some muscle. I think that correctly, but I think that's what he said, was that if he builds up some muscle, you know, and things kind of broke right, that he could, you know, maybe show some of those Darren Sproles traits. Not saying he's Darren Sproles, obviously, because Darren Sproles is in a league of his own, but that he does possess some of those traits. So, you know, you take a running back like him, and you throw him in with, you know, Wright and Urban. And that running back room, and it could just be such a headache for Big 12 defenses for years and years to come, which is ironic in the Big 12. But, you know, it's you really could have a three-headed monster for at least the next 3 years that could give teams fits. And if you're a K-State fan, I mean, that has got to excite you. That has got to excite you to be able to have running backs who have the skills and abilities of the guys that the K-State have that are younger guys that are freshmen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, yep, you know, the old football saying goes, you got to get the ball out to your best players. So, that discussion will be talked about even more as we head into August and get closer to, we all hope, that's the football season now. Staying on, there's a few more minutes left on the Purple Project Podcast here this evening. Eddie Greer from Manhattan, lives in Manhattan, Kansas, here for the Purple Project Podcast, your host and co-host living in SD, San Diego, California, Alex Aiden now. We have not talked special teams a little bit, but also who's nominated on the list here was Mighty Mouse Blake Lynch to the Lou Groza Award. And Lynch has made his share of kicks for K-State, and now he's one of 30 kickers now on the Lou Groza Award watch. And Lynch, he's made some huge kicks for K-State during his time here to this point, and we have not talked much about him, so he's going to be huge. And I want to throw her name into the mix also. We talked about her on his podcast also. Peyton Williams was also nominated for 2020 NCAA Woman of the Year honors, and Peyton is among 259 nominees from the NCAA Division I schools. And also, she is one of 128 nominees from the three NCAA divisions that has competed in multiple sports in her career. Peyton Williams, for those of you who don't know, was a two-star sports star at K-State, basketball and volleyball.
Well, I really quickly want to go back and I just, you know, kind of dawned on me that through Skylar Thompson, I never really touched about what he was nominated for. And I wanted to quickly say that Skylar, despite some of what I might have been saying at the beginning of that, he absolutely, in my opinion, is deserving of all of his nominations that he is up for.
Yeah,
I believe
that
Skylar, he is a good quarterback, and I think he's earned those, and I think that he's going to play a huge role, especially his experience coming into the season. But getting back to the two that you just mentioned, with first up, Blake Lynch, he absolutely deserves every preseason honor that comes his way, because he's just been Mr. Consistent ever since he, you know, started kicking extra points and doing a little high jump for high fives after every make with the placeholder. So, you know, he's fortunately we've got to see a lot of those little those jumping high fives that he's given because he's made a lot of kicks for K-State. So he's huge. I think he's one of the best kickers in the Big 12, and you know, he's absolutely deserving of that honor. He's, like I said, he's been consistent ever since his time at K-State. I still don't know how he gets so much power behind his kicks with the size that he has, but you know, hey, I'll take it any way you can get it. And it feels like K-State's been blessed to have some really good kickers over the past 20 plus years. You know, he's just another one in that line of really good kickers for them. And so he's going to play a huge role in this team because this K-State team is going to be a team that's going to be a ball possession type of team, possession offense. You know, let's control the clock, let's run the ball, let's keep the offense off the field. And that means that when K-State is in the red zone or they're within field goal range, they got to score, you know, especially in the Big 12 with how easy it is for other teams to score. And so he's going to play a big role because there are going to be times where he's going to come out and K-State is going to need those 3 points. You know, they're going to need that 48 yard kick from the 30 yard line or whatever it might be. And it makes you feel so much better trying a kicker out there that you have confidence in can make the kick. And when that's how I feel about Blake Lynch. You know, when he jogs on that field, I feel confident in him making the kick, especially if it's within 40 yards. You know, I really think that he's really consistent with the 40. So absolutely deserving of that. And then you get to Peyton Williams. I mean, everybody already knows what I think of her. I think that she is a role model for not just females, but athletes in general, male or female, on, you know, how you want to conduct yourself, you know, as an athlete. I think that she's a carbon copy of how to, you know, putting in the hard work, how to conduct yourself as a student athlete. How to get better, how to grow. We talk about development with the K-State basketball team. We talked about that multiple times. You know, they should go and look and see it, some of the things that she's done through her development and her times at K-State. And then obviously you taught me, you know, we've talked about the two-sport thing before as well. Mm-hmm. And that's just that much more of a, you know, tip of the cap to what she's doing. You come in as a two-star recruit, you rattle off the type of career that she had at K-State. I believe that she's deserving every award that's thrown her way. So, it's great for her to get that recognition. It's great for her to get any recognition that she deserves because, you know, it's like I said, with her, I really just feel like it's bigger than sports. I feel like it's really an example. She's an example for all K-State athletes on how you should conduct yourself, out there. And she's obviously a great example for the K-State women's basketball players, K-State volleyball players on on how to conduct yourself on those respective teams. And it's obviously played an integral role in some of those younger players' development as well. So she's incredibly deserving of the recognition. And, you know, to be 100% honest, she probably could use more recognition than she's received.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the bigger thing. So good for her getting her name out there. And, you know, people can begin to tell her story a little bit because it's a great story. So.
And kind of circling back to put a buck on Blake Lynch last year, 19 of 21 a year ago, 90% ranked 8th nationally, 3rd in school history, then is 13th in Big 12 history, basically en route to an honorable mention on the all Big 12 team last year. And not only that, he hit his school record time, K-State time, 15 straight field goals made, matching Jamie Ream's streak back in 1999. His 19 field goals last year was tied for fourth in K-State football history, while his 1.46 field goals per game ranked fourth in the Big 12 and 25th nationally. Alex, you nailed it right there. When you put it in the hands of Blake Lynch, 40 yards or more, he will knock it down most of the time. So, yeah, Blake Lynch is clutch, and we saw him make clutch kicks time and time again, especially Iowa State. So, he's going to be a huge weapon also.
Quickly, I just want to get this in, Eddie, too. That, looping back to the K-State offense, it makes the offense's job just that much easier.
Yeah.
When you've got a kicker like Blake Lynch, because you don't feel like, oh my gosh, I have to get this first down on third and four at the 22. You don't have to press to feel like I've got to get this or we're not going to get points. You know, because there's some teams where it's just like, college teams are just like, flip a coin on whether this guy will make a kick from anywhere on the field. I mean, you saw. Well, I watched enough college football to know that, you know, there's a lot of college football kickers out there, Eddie, that are not not the prettiest kick. So it's something that you don't take for granted. Heck, you see in the NFL as well. But as an offense, you don't have to press. You don't have to press when you get in the red zone or you get within that on the opponent's side of the 50, because you know you've got Blake Lynch as a security blanket to where, you know, okay, if this doesn't work, he'll come out, he'll knock in, you know, he'll knock in the kick, he'll get us 3 points, and we'll have some momentum going off of this drive. And when you have that mentality and you're not pressing, trying to convert every single third down, in return, you're going to convert more third downs because you're not pressing, you're playing loose. And that's going to lead to more touchdowns. That's going to lead to better efficiency in the red zone. And that's how you win football games. So it just makes the offense job easier, too.
Yeah, that's for sure, folks. Yeah, Blake Lynch, another weapon for that K-State offense. And before we sign out tonight on the Pro Project Podcast, Alex, so far, last time I checked, you started the podcast with the Royals, and we're going to end this episode with the Royals. All right, so last time, before coming down here to the Man Cave to record this podcast, the Royals were up 12-6. I'm trying to get the score now.
I can tell you, Eddie, because I actually had the notification. I totally forgot. I was like, wow, someone's going to be listening to this and say, oh, well, Alex, you missed this crazy ending, but I totally forgot that I get notifications on my phone when the game ends. So I actually got the notification that they won 14-6. So it was a good game for them, and it looks like they hit six home runs tonight. Six home runs, 14 runs total. It looks like they actually tied a club record for most home runs in a game with six home runs. So there you go. There you go. Whit Merrifield, he was a triple away from the cycle, Eddie, it looks like, as well. So, hey, you know, I'm just happy that we could talk about this. I'm happy I can sit here and scroll through a box score and be like, well, Eddie, let me tell you about the stats in this baseball game. Because it means there's baseball going on. So there you go. Yeah, 14-6. They're two and two. And Eddie, we didn't touch on this yet, but I think we should mention it, because we did mention baseball a couple episodes ago, previously before it began.
We did. Yep.
The playoff field was expanded from 10 teams to 16 teams, and I was already talking to you about how this season was going to have kind of a March Madness type of feel.
Yep.
Because baseball is so unpredictable, and in the short sprints, anything can happen. Well, now that you've just widened the field from 10 teams to 16 teams, you've got even more March Madness feel now. Because every team in baseball, regardless of what you thought coming into spring training, you may have thought, well, we're going to lose 100 games this year coming into spring training. I absolutely believe that every single team, maybe not the Marlins at the moment, maybe aside from the Marlins.
Hey, the Marlins were playing, they're playing pretty good. They won a couple games now.
Right, they were playing good. But, I mean, legitimately, I think every team is sitting there thinking, why can't we make the playoffs? I mean, it's a 60-game season. 16 teams make it. And then the kicker, Eddie, is what the first round's going to be like best of three.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's what I heard, yeah.
Any team can win a best of three series. So the longer those series go, the more likely you are for the better team to win. But when that best of three, anyone can win a best of three series.
Yep, that's so right, yeah.
It's gonna be crazy if they can play. They can get it played. It's going to be crazy. I saw it today, Eddie. The Royals are 75-1 odds to win the World Series. What? That's insane. But that's what this season has done. The season has literally like doubled the Royals' chances of winning the World Series. That's what the season's done. Everybody has hope and has an opportunity to be able to play and have a successful season. Now, with the Royals, I also mentioned, I mean, they're better than the 100-loss team that came out last year. I didn't expect them to lose 100 games this year if they did play 162. But the point being that every team legitimately should have hope that they can, make a run. I mean, why not? Why not think about it? You know, you're in a 60-game season, all it takes is one hot run to get going. But the flip side, all it takes is one cold run by somebody else. So
you can't have no cold runs. You can't force off slow.
Yep, and you know, we talk about my Royals as well. I know your Braves had quite the opening series up there in New York, and I think they got a 14-1 victory. Last night,
I was watching. Yeah, they're on ESPN last night. Yep,
and so they're buzzing along too. And I've mentioned this to you before, but they've got a really good young team. And mentioning young teams, just to finish it off, being out here in San Diego, the San Diego Padres have a really young team, and they look really good. In their first series, they looked really good, and I expected them to have a good team this year. They're really on the fringe, I think, of being a contender in the NL West. And I thought that this would be the year where they could possibly be on the playoff fringe. But now that this thing's been expanded to 16 teams, you know, I look at a team like the Padres, who have got Manny Machado now. They got Fernando Tatis Jr., who's one of the best young players in the game. They got Eric Hosmer. They got Will Myers. You know, they got Chris Paddock, who's one of the best young pitchers in the game. And I look at a team like them and I think, well, yeah, this is going to benefit a team like the Padres because they're going to get in the playoffs. And if they can get in, you know, I know that they can do damage with the young talent that they have. I mean, so it's the same type of deal with the Braves. You know, you get the Braves in. Granted, the Braves have been to the playoffs. We've talked about that with this young core. But, you know, you get them in and they can absolutely make a run and have a chance to hoist it up. And I've heard some people say, do you really want to hoist up a World Series trophy that has an asterisk? I don't give a damn, Eddie. And as long as I'm holding a World Series trophy in my hands, I don't care what it says next to it. You know, so it's an exciting time, and hopefully, I keep putting that caveat in there, but hopefully we can see it through because I think it's going to make for a lot of entertaining baseball.
Yeah, as of now, I know it's way early, but way early talking playoffs. But Royals right now, the win there over the Detroit Tigers tonight, they're in front of the Detroit Tigers in the overall American League standings, and they would be the 8th seed. They would get in. Your KC Royals would get in.
See, that's what I'm talking about, Eddie. That's what I'm talking about. Look, the Royals are in the playoffs as of the last week of July right now. So.
For that.
Who would have thunk it, right, Eddie? Who would have thunk it at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, for right now. And then, I joke around. I mean, you mentioned San Diego. San Diego is leading the National League 3-1 right now. And then I made the joke about the Miami Marlins now. Yeah, they're dealing with that terrible situation right now with 11 personnel affected with the COVID. We talked about it earlier. Marlins sitting at 2-1. They're tied with St. Louis, Chicago, Colorado. As of now, as we're ending this podcast right now, so it's gonna be interesting. And you know, the podcast I listen to about the Braves, they refer to the Marlins as this could favor the Marlins as if they all can stay healthy. That's the key question with these younger team with these rebuilding teams is that this type of I apologize Wildcat fans for going we're going off the rails here after to close out the show but the Marlins, Padres, your Royals. These type of teams here, it favors them because they get off to a fast start. You know, you have a chance to ride that momentum. So, but unfortunately, with the unfortunate news of the Miami Marlins here just today, it's going to be interesting. This is going to be some must-stay-tuned news here with the Miami Marlins and baseball. We've touched on it all night tonight and see where this goes. And definitely, as far as K-State goes, definitely will keep an eye out on what the Big 12 finally does. And once they have that, we will definitely talk about it on the next episode of Troll Pete.
Yeah, Eddie, I'm guessing, we could be wrong. We could roll in next week and not have an answer. But I am guessing the next week's episode, we're going to have a lot to talk about on the football front.
And next upcoming episodes, really, at that front.
Yeah.
A lot to talk about here in the next coming weeks. And very excited for that and this podcast. Is just heating up, folks. So definitely, Wildcat fans, spread the word about the Trophy Purple Project Podcast. This will go out tomorrow, Tuesday, as usual. And yep, you guys will also need to be on the lookout as well. So a lot more Skylar Thompson talk, a lot more football talk as we're approaching August. Summer's heating up in football. All the sports are back for the time being anyways. And college football and NFL, your time is coming, hopefully.
Fingers crossed, Eddie. Fingers crossed. I've said this before. I'll say it again. I think it's a great way to end the podcast, actually. It's one thing if you got to cancel a basketball season or a baseball season. It's a whole other thing if you got to cancel a football season. And it's not just because of the money. And, yes, football makes more money than other sports. We've talked about that ad nauseum on this show because it is a huge talking point. But let's be honest, Eddie. I mean, what do a majority of the sports fans, you know, what's going to be the most popular thing on TV? It's going to be football.
Yeah.
That's what people want to see. That is ultimately what people want to see. I love baseball. I love basketball, but they don't compete with football, you know, here in the United States. And so, you know, there might be, you know, everybody thinks that these talks are, you know, really heavy right now around that we've had around all these other sports. Boy, if you start cringing on someone's football season, Eddie, oh, especially down in the SEC, oh boy. Ooh, Alabama fans, I don't think they'll take lightly if their season gets canceled. So
yeah, you want to stay away down there. Don't go to Alabama if it goes that way.
It's going to be, I think that if there is no football, it's going to be a different deal. It's going to be harder. I would assume it would be much harder for people in the that are in charge of those decisions with the NFL and college football to cancel a season than it would be to cancel the a baseball or basketball season just because of, one, the financials of it, and two, because of the fan interest of it.
Yeah. Yep, so you're more football talk coming up on the Purple Project Podcast. And with that, that's going to be another wrap for another edition of Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast, Episode 12. Alex, sir, we'll do it again next week. Lot to look forward to, hopefully.
All right, it'll be a big show next week. Hopefully we'll have some more Big 12 information for the people.
Sounds like a plan. Alex Aiden from San Diego, California. Eddie Greer right here in Manhattan, Kansas, saying thank you guys for listening to the Purple Project Podcast. We will talk to you next time on Trophy Purple Project Podcast. And remember, here come them cats. We'll talk to you next week.
Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.